You are listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast where we can't forget to stay real and have fun taking pop music seriously. Hosted by, he's down to earth like this, rocking this business, the Aussie Prince of PR, David Lim. And me, Jolie from the block, yes, that's Rumford, Babington. Hello, David, how are you doing?
I'm good, JB. This is really exciting to be getting into a diva of this magnitude, isn't it, on our show?
Behind the scenes intel, guys. David is often telling me that what our previous episode on this artiste is always in our top 10 most listened episodes or something like that.
You're not going to believe this, guys, but our most listened to episode of all time, like in Right Back At You history, is the previous Jennifer Lynn Lopez episode when we did On The Six and J-Lo.
Bloody hell.
That was 3 years ago, JB.
Well, we're sorry if we've kept you waiting, but Jennifer Lynn stands, you better circle back on this one, girlies. And you know it's very timely to get into this album now, isn't it, David?
It is so timely. Look, listen, last year, Jennifer Lynn celebrated 20 years of this album, This Is Me Then, and she announced a sequel album, This Is Me Now, which is going to be released at some point this year. We don't know whether around the time of this episode coming out, whether there's going to be a formal announcement with a release date because it's close to Valentine's. We feel like J-Lo might pull a trick like that. It's very her.
And you know what it's like in Right Back At Your World? I think somehow between recording, edit and release, an announcement's going to be happening. So don't worry, if this sounds dated by the time you're hearing it, we're aware of it and we're putting it into the ether that J-Lo, we are ready for the formal date announcement. And do you know what, David? While we're at it, I'm just going to wish you, my wonderful friend, a happy Valentine's Day. Well, we're going to get all lovey-dovey in this episode.
Happy Galentine's Day.
Happy Galentine's Gay. Right, Davo, before we get into it, can you read us a lovely 5-star review?
Absolutely. Now, this one is left by David_C91 from Ireland. I stumbled across this podcast last year and I'm hooked. Every time I listen to this podcast, it takes me back to my childhood and I can relate to some of the memories. The chemistry is infectious and I always look forward to next week. Thank you for giving us all a place to relive our childhood. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And look, I'm going to apologize, but also not really. But if you're addicted to our podcast, if you're hooked, we love to hear it. So we're sorry if there are any Right Back At You addicts out there. and we will fuel that addiction. So apologies, but also not apologies out there. If you're loving what we're doing, please do leave us a lovely 5-star review so we can read it out in a future episode. Follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. Davo, shall we jump into Miss Jennifer Lynn?
Before we get into this album, this era, and all the iconic singles and bops, let's do a little recap on where Miss Jennifer Lynn Lopez was 21 years ago. So we're going straight back into the imperial phase of J-Lo. Now, this was the time, kids, if you can imagine, she was like the Kim Kardashian of her time. Like, constant tabloid stories, front page of papers, magazines, gossip blogs. Like, people couldn't get enough of whatever J-Lo was doing.
I'm not gonna compare her to Kim K, personally. Mm. That's a David Lim opinion there, everyone. But she was everywhere. There was no break. There was constant. Before this, we'd had the albums we just covered. 2 albums, remix album, constant singles coming out, constant movies coming out. And then it seemed like it was fueled even more in this era that we're about to get into with the relationship that happens and everything that's going on. And I think as pop fans, we love to see it. We love to, not, you know, not negative stuff, but we love to see our girls prominent and present everywhere. But I think we may see in this episode, maybe like the non-pop fans or the ones that don't get it, maybe get a little bit fatigued of it, you know, because there was no break for that, for Jennifer Lynn, and she deserves a break as well. You can't have this constant spotlight. But I think we'll see a little bit of that as we go on in this episode.
So I think this is a very interesting time to sort of revisit and jump into her career because, you know, we've, as you said, two very successful studio albums. On the Six, her debut album, 3 times platinum in America. It would go on to sell over 8 million copies worldwide. The J-Lo album, instantly iconic upon release, 4 times platinum in the US. It was a number one album there. It would also go on to sell over 8 million worldwide. So we're entering this era. Oh, not to mention, she also released a remix album, J to the L-O, at the start of this year in 2002.
Can't forget that.
And that was also a number one album. So there's a lot of pressure riding on studio album number 3. And let's not forget the box office smash rom-coms that she's had back-to-back years. We had The Wedding Planner in 2001. 2002, we had Made in Manhattan, which is the highest grossing film of her career thus far, I believe. And as she said, the whole Bennifer thing, her romance with Ben Affleck. It also is a little bit like timely for us to revisit this project now because their romance, their story has come a full circle, as everyone knows. They were engaged at this time and then broke it off. So we're going to course through that period of their relationship. But they're now, in 2023, happily married.
Spoiler alert. I think hopefully it's just fate that this has all happened. But if not, it is the most genius marketing ploy ever that 20 years on... We have This Is Me Then, and now we're getting This Is Me Now. And yeah, but from the like wonderful side, it's so lovely to now look at back at all this stuff that we're going to get into and see how full circle it all is and just how wonderful that it all comes across. So, you know, look, if you're listening to this on Valentine's Day, if you're a single guy, gal, they, them, maybe you want to pick up. If you've got an ex that isn't an absolute prick, reach out. Be a little more J-Lo.
Agony aunt, relationship guru, Dr. JB, right there. And do you know what? There's actually quite a few songs on this album that's very like, oh, maybe we should reconcile, that kind of vibe. So yeah, listen with caution, I would say. If you're in a certain headspace thinking about a certain someone, listen with caution.
And keep your eyes peeled on your DM request folder.
might be time to unblock some people. You never know.
Just keep your option open, girls. With all that in mind, please can we kick off this episode with September 2002, the eternal fresh smash hit. Like, hit is the hit that it's so much a hit. It smacks you in the face because it's such a hit. I would say it's her signature song. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
I think this is signature J-Lo, yeah.
And it's my signature song too. Jenny from the Block. Now, David, I know we say this a lot, but we only say it when we want to say it. This is one that does go off every time without a doubt.
It really does. And do you know what? It is such an enduring signature hit for our Jennifer Lynn that even recently when Jennifer Coolidge made her first TikTok.
Oh, brilliant.
Did you see she quoted the lyrics of this song? And it's just like, I feel like this will always be referenced in J-Lo's career, for better or worse, but I feel like she was on board with the messaging of it, Jenny from the Block. So I think she can run with it. It's sort of like the Spice Girls being given their nicknames, isn't it? Ginger, Posh, etc.
I mean, imagine being such a huge, prominent pop culture icon, entertainment mogul veteran, that you are given not one nickname, but several. So on one hand, you are globally known by your name, Jennifer Lopez. Like, that is instant name recognition around the world. But beyond that, you've also got these prominent nicknames that everyone knows. J-Lo, Jenny from the Block, and then she's also, you know, part of Bennifer.
Now, Joel, do you think after our second J-Lo episode is out, we're going to get Jennifer Lynn as the next nickname? Now,
thank you, David. You took the thought and the words right out of my mouth. I think we need to add Jennifer Lynn.
We need to make Jennifer Lynn happen.
Happen, yeah. Globally. And preferably said in an Australian or Essex accent. It's one for our global or regional hands, you know. I still think in the last episode, like in my head lives rent free. Once a day, I'll just say to myself, Jennifer Lynn, get down here. Fantastic. Maybe it can adapt to every accent in the world. I'm not sure. I'll stay within my wheelhouse. I won't try any other accents.
Yeah, Jennifer Lynn is your girl. You know, she is sort of the new evolved Jenny from the block. Like, it's a little more personal.
I think what is genius about this as well is that, you know, we take Jenny from the block and it's prominently, I know we haven't even got into it yet, but it's prominently about her life and growing up in the Bronx. But I think we can all take that thing, Jenny from the block, and we put ourselves in the song and we think about where we're from. I mean, I joked in the intro, but, you know, I would always like envision it as like Joel from Romford, you know, like you can
JB from
you
the
put
block.
Yourself in the, you know, you put yourself in there. David, let's start at the beginning of this song. I was shocked to find out that this song was leaked originally, and the leak was coming from inside the house. Do you know who it was coming from, Davo? Tommy Mottola! He leaked this.
He has entered the chat.
He's I was entered waiting the for chat. This.
Not since our Mariah episode have we had Uncle Tommy come into
We've had whispers of Mickey Mouse, who's very similar, same voice actor allegedly, but Tommy's entered the chat. And the lead single of the album was not going to be this track. You know, J-Lo wanted I'm Glad, I believe, which does make sense.
That's what I heard. I mean, she wasn't a big fan of this being Jenny from the Block and the single after this to be singles, because in her mind, she'd already done the kind of hip-hop R&B. You know, she's already done that sound with her remix album, and she was ready to move on to something like, you know, she wanted to start a whole new era. But the fact is, those were hits. Record those labels hits. Are all like, do you know what? We need hits, so let's go with this one.
Like, you know, this is a beautiful album and it's an absolute vibe, and I completely understand from the artistry side of J-Lo, but, and it's very rare that I agree with this man, but this album needed this hit and also that thing, that song to bring you over, the crossover from the last albums to this albums. But on the other hand, it does shock you that then it isn't an album full of this. But hey-ho, Tommy sometimes knows what he's doing, and this one did. So he leaked it to radio. He got on that phone. He was saying, listen, Connecticut radio, wherever you are in the States, you need to play this song I've just sent you. It's called Jenny from the Block. I don't need to tell you who it is, but it's from Jennifer Lynn Lopez, and you need to put this in high rotation now. And it worked, Davo, didn't it?
And it worked. And I believe this was probably like the early days of the internet. So like something on like regional radio somewhere in America, some folks would have heard of it. Maybe it got online on LimeWire or something like that. And, you know, voila, they had to rush release the record. Can you just imagine J-Lo like thinking she's got a breather before diving into her third studio album? Oh, no, we brought forward the release schedule. Get to work. Fuck's sake, Tommy.
I wonder as well, maybe if there was the thought in J-Lo's mind, you know, sometimes when you know something is a good idea, but you kind of get overwhelmed by the potential thought of like how impactful it could be.
Basically, the way I see it is I don't think J-Lo probably realized that this was going to be such a big pop culture moment. But I think what was deep inside her was she wanted to respond to a lot of the kind of public image of her, which I guess was how this song was even written in the first place. You know, we got to remind ourselves that in this time, the tabloids were running crazy. You know, I remember like just being in the supermarket aisles in Coles or Woolworths or whatever and picking up like Women's Weekly or whatever. And every single week, there'll be a story about J-Lo being a big diva. She demands only like vanilla scented loo rolls, or like, you know, she wants scented candles everywhere in her studio and her dressing room. So this image, this larger than life diva image has been cultivated in the press for Jennifer Lynn for a number of years now. Like, I want to say starting since she was dating Diddy.
Yeah.
So now it's her opportunity to kind of like respond and just be like, look, I'm real. I'm just Jenny from the block.
That's just me.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite lyrics in this song, David?
My favorite section is actually verse one, where it's a little bit more autobiographical, I guess you could say. You know, I love that she talks us through. It's like a high level kind of IMDb bio, you know, from In Living Color to movie scripts. Like she's talking about when she was a backup dancer for New Kids on the Block and on TV, and then, you know, going to movie scripts. So Selena, her breakout movie, to On the Six, her debut album, Headline Clips. You know, that was when she started dating Puffy.
My favorite bit is just, to me, it's like breathing, it's just like breathing, like real, being real is the same as breathing. It's that connection that me and J-Lo have in common. It is so on the nose, but it's that fine line where it absolutely works. There is a J-Lo solo version, but it is mainly known with the featured rappers on it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the rappers add a real kind of just quality to the song because, you know, she's talking about from the Bronx. She needed to include the New Yorker rappers on it, you know, Jadakiss, Styles P. Like, I really love sonically that old school 90s hip hop vibe of this. Like, isn't it interesting? Like, you know, you would have been in Romford at this time. I would have been in Australia, but I think we all universally understood what was the sound of Manhattan. And she captured this in the zeitgeist, didn't she?
Absolutely. And I know I do say it a lot and it is sort of a joke, but I'm never really joking. Like, there could be an amazing, edgy, biographical J-Lo musical and you can just see it with, like, the Bronx set up and everything and you can interweave all her other hits, but, like, this would be the headline track of it.
Yeah.
So speaking of audiovisual, shall we talk about this music video, David? Directed by Francis Lawrence, who's worked with Britney, Destiny's Child, Janet, Melanie C, and gone on to direct some of the Hunger Games films. I don't want to speak for you, but I think this music video is absolutely incredible.
Talk about taking a look at where we are in pop culture and really speaking to what is happening. You know, the concept of this whole video is J-Lo through the lens of the media, isn't it? You know, we've got pap shots. It's just so clever the way it's set up that even to a point, I think when it first came out, I'm like, is this all staged? Like, or is this like just really her chilling?
Incorporating that paparazzi feel in this stylized way is just absolutely genius. So you're leaning into it, but you're doing it in your way and looking absolutely phenomenal while doing it. When I was watching it, I thought the opening video was giving me slight Paranormal Activity vibes, which I just thought was hilarious looking at it now.
They shot 19 locations in 3 days. Like,
you don't get that today.
God, like, that is quick. Really bringing out the pace of J-Lo's celebrity life. Working, moving about, you know, we got shots of her listening to music in the recording studio, in a dance studio space, you know, nice, cute little teaser of the album track, Loving You.
And it is clever because it's like, if the album is such a different vibe to this song, really, like, let's get that teaser in there. And then I would say that track is probably like the next closest to the previous stuff. So it's all these little steps to weave you into this album and era.
Let's not ignore the big Hollywood shaped elephant in the room. Ben Affleck is in this video with Jennifer Lynn, right? He's participating in this video shoot with them. Even the director's like, oh, I think Ben is a little bit surprised at how quickly we move. Like, it's a little bit different to when he would shoot movies and there's lots of waiting around. It's like, we don't wait around. We got to move.
Got to move, darling.
But this song, Loving You, is a love song. And even though we only hear like a few seconds snippet of it, it's a good reminder that, oh, she's got a love album coming out.
Out of all the looks in the video, my favourite is that cream cardigan look with the hoop earrings, the red lip, the slicked back hair.
You know, obviously, like, I was a kid watching this on Video Hits. I was like, oh my God, she is like oily skin, stark naked underneath that cardigan.
I know.
With just like a little pair of panties on. I was like, oh my God, hope my dad's not in the room. But you know, the look that I really enjoy in this video is that cream beret with the matching cargo pants.
Fabulous.
Like, this is such a 2002 look. As we talked about in our 2002 episode with This Is Disco, when Kylie was also having the cargo pants situation in Love at First Sight. I love this look.
I think cargo pants are back, you know.
I just bought a pair last year from ASOS.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
I need to pair it with some heels and like a beret, which I also happen to have.
Oh,
my style hasn't changed in 20 years, let's be honest.
I think you could do J-Lo looks party where everyone has to come in a J-Lo look.
Oh, yeah. You know somebody's going to come in that green dress.
Of course they are. There can be 100 green dresses in the room, but it just takes one beret and cargo pants look from David Lim to absolutely pop up.
Actually, speaking of the cargo pants, that I wore that to the One More Time night.
Oh.
I don't know if you noticed because it was a bit dark.
Yeah, it was a bit dark. But we'll
and
have
I styled
to...
it differently. I kind of was a bit lad fishing with my look. I had the bucket hat, the puffer gilet. Like,
yes, you were. Were you not boiling?
No, it was just a gilet and a t-shirt. I could manage in that. And like big gold chains. I was giving like kind of more 90s. But I think if I'd take those cargo trousers and I put it in something more J-Lo adjacent, like it could be
absolutely
a whole different vibe.
We'll save the gilet for later in the episode. And shout out to One More Time. Look, get yourself down there, Dalston. Follow our lovely friend Rob, hosting these amazing One More Time club nights, ladies and gents and non-binary friends. But David, I think we could have a party where you can rock the cargo pants look. I'll find this cream cardigan look and we'll make it happen. A night of 1,000 J-Lo's. So Uncle Ben said that this music video nearly ruined his career. And I'll be honest, no offence, Ben, but you wish.
Hopefully 20 years down the line, he can look back on it fondly and be like, oh, I'm glad we did that because that was a snapshot of our life. So much of this era truly felt like it was very carefully set up to be a photo album, a snapshot of time. It's like, yeah. J-Lo knew that in a few years, in a few decades, we're going to look back on this moment.
Me and you, we are.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about chart positions for this monumental smash hit? Let's start big, bold and strong. America, number 3 smash hit on the US Billboard Hot 100. Here in the UK, again, a number 3 smash hit. Spain, number 2 smash hit. Ola, as you would say. Scotland, number 8. I'm disappointed in you, Scotland, here. Number 1 in Canada. Thank you, Canada. 5 in Australia. Thank you, Arias. So, Davo, shall we move on to November 2002? And it's not This Is Me Now, but it's This Is Me Then.
I would say until her Love album came around, this is probably the J-Lo album I spent the most time with.
Oh, really?
I vividly remember going to the local library, borrowing this album, cheekily ripping it at home on the home computer. Sorry, Jenny. I would
call 911.
I would eventually give you my coin, but at this stage, I was kind of just maybe more curious about what the album was like. So at this point in her career, this is probably J-Lo's most cohesive album yet. It is done by one team. So that's Corey Rooney and Dan Shay mostly. Now, these guys have worked with her since On The Six. They get her strengths. They get what she likes. They sort of get what direction she needs to be in. So this one leans more into a vintage R&B and soul direction while keeping elements of that fresh R&B and hip hop sounds of 2002. There are lots of samples from the 60s, 70s and 80s very cleverly woven in here. So that really gives you the textures, that really classic touch. And I feel like with a title like This Is Me Then, I knew immediately that it was meant to be like a photo album, like it was like a memory box. You're meant to feel nostalgic when you listen to it. And it's just kind of nice to hear her just sort of take one musical direction and just run with it. Because, you know, the previous stuff, we've had dance music on the album, we've had Latin pop, a bit of hip hop, R&B. It's just nice, isn't it, to just get that one theme.
It really does feel what she was wanting to put out at this time. And as you were saying, she had a much more hands-on approach with this album, and she was heavily influenced by the works of Michael Jackson, Luther Vandross, and Stevie Wonder. What's interesting is that this album was actually meant to come out in 2003, Davo, but because Tommy had got involved and brought forward a single to September, this then was brought forward as well. I was seeing some reports that apparently it was meant to come out in September as well. That didn't quite really make sense to me. But November 2002 makes a sensible early choice. Do you think this was meant to have a Valentine's Day release originally?
It feels like it would be much better paced for a Valentine's release, but at the same time, Jenny from the Block was kicking off. So yeah,
got to get that Q4 release out there.
You got to get that Q4 release. You got to get this as a Christmas stocking filler. So that's why it's out in November.
So yeah, as you were saying, there's this overall both reflection theme on past relationships, but then also huge love letter to Benjamin. He became Jennifer Lopez's muse when writing and recording this album. So yeah, absolutely. I love your concept of photo album, and really seems like a missed opportunity to have had that sort of tie-in merch with it.
But you can sort of see that, right, in the artwork. Like, you know, all the kind of coffee stains, there's a little bit weathered. It is meant to look like an old yellowing photo.
Absolutely.
So she's giving you that kind of vintage vibe for it. And also, how wild was it that when she announced her This Is Me Now album, she did that kind of 20 years like flashback where she morphs this picture of this album cover into who she is now.
But do you know what's even better, David, is that she retook, that was a new photo of recreating this cover.
I was wondering how they did that, because I thought they do not have that technology back then in 2002. For that kind of resolution, you know what I mean? We're like in a very HD world now. So yeah, well, you saying she recreated that whole look makes sense, which is even crazier because she looks...
J-Lo's one of the only people that could do that.
Timeless. And Nicole Scherzinger. Auntie Nicole, Auntie Nikki.
Auntie Nikki. I mean, sidetrack. Auntie Nikki looked like she had the great Christmas getting her nieces or whatever involved in all her TikTok videos. Dream. Imagine having a fabulous aunt just blitzing in at Christmas being like, right, we're going to make loads of content. I'm going to make this situation work for me. So William and Rosie, you better be ready for future years to come. So we must say as well, Jennifer Lynn had beyond a much more hands-on role, because we can all say that. She did co-write every track on this album, or basically every track apart from a cover. I mean, is it really long game or is it marketing genius? 20 years on, she's married the man. There's a new album that's a sequel to this. Was it some kind of ironclad contract made back in the day? I'm sure it is genuine, but either way, it's absolutely bloody genius.
I mean, I am not that cynical. I like to believe in real love.
What are you trying to say about me?
I think you're, you know, maybe overthinking this a little, and I need to check if that's Tommy Mottola really behind that mic.
Tommy Mottola cosplaying as Joel Babington.
I believe in true love. I was swept up in that shit last year when they got back together. And also, like, J-Lo is a businesswoman.
Exactly.
She is not going to let this kind of anniversary / reunion pass by without doing a sequel album. Like, she knows what the narrative is, as per Jenny from the Block. She's always been savvy about the public perception of her and how to kind of tie it in to her advantage. So, she's going to do it.
A bit of both is what you're saying.
No, I think she saw the opportunity that coincided with her personal life and she went for it.
Speaking of opportunity, before we even get into the album, David, upon its initial release, the first 20,000 copies of This Is Me Then included a 4-panel insert that featured information about her fragrance, Glow by J-Lo, and a peel-off fragrance label that allowed those who purchased the CD to test the scent. Genius.
I loved it. I can't remember which Beyonce CD it was that I bought that had her Tommy Hilfiger collaboration on it, True Star or something. It was blue. But I remember going, oh, okay. Savvy. They thought about this.
And again, before we get into the album, there was a potential tour planned, RIP. Spokesperson for Lopez revealed she did plan to take a break from acting to do a tour in support of this album in April 2003. But it was clarified later that the plans had been cancelled. So that is a real shame. I think if anything, we look back, and I mean, how would she ever fit it in? But we would have loved more tours from J-Lo over the years.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the thing, right? There's always persistent stuff in the press and critics being like, oh, can she really sing live? And it doesn't help that we don't see enough of J-Lo live performances. Now, in the last decade, we have.
Yeah.
Which is great, but it wasn't until her Greatest Hits tour, which I believe both of us went in different countries, she was saving everything in her career up to that point to be like, okay, you want a concert? I'm going to give you the Greatest Hits. And that was incredible. And from that point onwards, you know, she did Vegas. It was just, there was no stopping her as a live performer. But at this time in her career, there was just no fucking way she could have fit any of this shit in. Like, the films, let's be honest, were still the big breadwinners in her career.
Absolutely. And I guess if you're going to spend 3 months doing something, I guess as a business person, it's more viable to make a film than to go on tour.
She's still like seen as a film star first. Like, she's a leading lady, box office bankable star.
Absolutely.
So, I'm sorry, the tour needed to wait as much as we would have liked it this time. And she has 3 albums and a remix album to perform.
Absolutely. So let's jump into some tracks from this album, David.
Oh, we're going to pick some highlights here, guys. Don't worry if you're waiting to hear the singles. This is what we do at Right Back At You, in case you're new. We go through things in release order. So we get the album first. We're going to talk about the album first, and we get to the singles later. Joel, can I go first and pick a track?
No, of course you can.
Let's go with the album opener, Still. A moody vintage slow jam. When I sleep, I have dreams about the way we used to kiss, about the way you used to hold me and say nothing would ever harm me. When we first met, oh, how you charmed me, made me smile when I was down, big pimping around the town.
I think this sets up the vibe of the album really well, especially coming from Jenna from The Block. This lets you know that this album isn't that. It also sets up the reflective then part of the album. It's reflecting on an ex. I think David Lim, are you ready for it? You're not going to like it, but just take it on board. You could add this to your Crying at the Disco playlist as the final track. It's the lights have gone up in the club. It's time to go. Go and get your chips. Go and get on the night bus.
I hear what you're saying, and I do actually have like Crying at the Disco Act 2 for those types of songs. So yes, a separate playlist that's a little bit more mellow is definitely made for the night bus. But I never thought of adding this on there. So this is, yeah, legit suggestion.
I just asked for your consideration at this time.
No, this is, I'm feeling it, yeah.
Expanded edition.
This has always had my heart from the very first second I played this album. That gorgeous intro where it's like really just the strings. Now, that is a beautiful sample of Teddy Pendergrass's 1979 song, Set Me Free. The rest of that Teddy song is actually quite up-tempo, but this, the way they cut this string intro and put it in J-Lo's song, oh my God. And then the backing vocalist, when they come in on that first verse, when I sleep, like, it's giving, you know, 60s Ronettes style thing. I was just like, oh my God, it's just, it takes you to another era, doesn't it?
I mean, this whole thing takes you to another era, which is wonderful, beautiful concept.
Now, very interestingly, in this year, as you said, J-Lo launched her fragrance line, and she started with Glow, which was the first product, but then the one that followed after it is called Still. And I remember seeing it in Myers, and I'm just like, oh, I bet these people don't know that it's like actually named after her album track. Like, it literally has the same font as what she uses on this album.
I wonder if she did any visual ads and stuff that featured this song then.
I feel from memory for the campaign for Still, they didn't use the song, which made me think, what the fuck are you doing?
Shocking.
But that's my memory of it. I could be wrong, but I remember thinking that was so obvious. She already has a song called Still.
Who looks like the dickhead then?
Tommy. Benny Medina.
So a highlight from me, David, and we must say, you know, we're picking out highlights, and in the words of J-Lo, why be blonde or brunette when you can be bronze with highlights? So a highlight from me is Loving You, and I sent you a song, David, that sounded similar to me. The backing of this song, David, sounds very similar to Raven Simonier's Some Call It Magic. Again, this is from the That's So Raven 2 soundtrack that we mentioned on our Hilary Duff episode, which makes me wonder, can this somehow be mentioned on every episode going forward? I don't know.
I think
know.
You'll find a way.
Even after
this is the song that we did hear teased in the Journey from the Block music video, which you mentioned. And I think that this song had the potential to have a really fun pop dance single remix for a single, which I think would have been a nice tempo, up-tempo double A-side to go with any of the upcoming singles, to be honest. Mm. And also could have been a potential really fun tour moment.
It's got that kind of bubbly, summery feel to it that makes me think of I'm Real, the album version. You know, the flute is beautiful in there. The beat actually contains a portion of Juicy Fruit by Matume, which has been sampled so, so many times, and most famously by Tamar Braxton, The One. And also, like, the chorus has, like, bits from George Benson's 80s funk bop, Never Give Up on a Good Thing. So it really does have that kind of cross-generational retro feel. And yeah, like you say, a pop remix, I can sort of see this working, especially coming off the back of Journey from the Block, which is so fun, right?
Absolutely. What's another highlight from you on the album, Davo?
JB, I have to give a shout out to The One, version 2 specifically.
Oh, okay.
Now, this one is a bonus track. Allegedly, they weren't sure if they could clear the use of the stylistics, You Are Everything, so that's why there's two versions, allegedly. The main album version doesn't have the You Are Everything bit in the chorus. Right. It uses a tune, but it doesn't have You Are Everything in the chorus. Now, I was so in love from the second I heard version 2 that I literally never listened to the main version.
So to you, it's version 1.
It's the only version. When you listen to The One without You Are Everything, it just feels really low energy, like it's missing something. So I absolutely encourage everyone to just go straight to this version. And it's just gorgeous. It's just like, it introduced me actually to that stylistic song. So we got to thank J-Lo for that.
Thank you, Jennifer Lynn. You know, I didn't know if we needed two versions, so that really clears things up. So thank you for that, David. Allegedly, obviously, as we know. But yeah, mellow, gorgeous, global sounds.
And it also just really feels like a classic J-Lo song. It's still got that hip-hop beat to it.
Yeah.
And it's like just beautiful R&B. And it's, I don't know, I feel like this could have been a single.
Well, especially because of what the album and the era was saying. It definitely, you know, it was the messaging.
We needed the love song. Now, I was on genius.com looking at the lyrics for this, as if I don't already know it by heart. And then at the bottom in the notes, it says it's the fourth and final single.
That's not right, darling.
I don't see the receipts for it. I went on Discogs just to see if there's any promo copies. Someone's flogging. I'm sorry, Genius. You're going to have to back that up a little. Like, I don't see where your source is.
Expect a call from our lawyers, which is me doing another voice. Very interesting. If anyone out there, any Jennifer Lynn stans, know any info about that, do let us know. But I think Uncle Genius has just got it wrong there. So, David, we have to talk about it. This, the whole vibe of this album, the messaging, the reason it's in existence, the track, Dear Ben.
Talk about the perfect post-coital ballad.
Oh, plus, yeah.
You know, it's giving, like, when you're just cuddling in bed, watching the curtains sway in the breeze. You know, that gorgeous harp. It's also giving, like, fragrance commercial.
In another world, Adam Rickett will sing I Breathe Again, and then I'll follow up with Dear Adam.
I love you. Yeah. You're perfect. I just can't control myself. Be with no one else. It seems I'm addicted to the way you like to touch me. I don't think they understand why I love at your command.
Now it is tricky when our girlies put a lover's name in the song title. You know, Ariana done it with Pete, Jen's done it with Ben here, but then obviously the long game on this one worked. And our girl is saying, I love you, you're perfect, a manifestation of my dreams. Jen was ahead of her time. 21 years ago, she was having that 2023 Lucky Girl energy manifestation.
The song originally was just called Perfect, and it was literally down to the last minute that she decided to change it to Dear Ben. Like, I read that it was the day before they sent it to manufacturers. She went, nope, it needs to be called Dear Ben. So I like that it was so... I actually love it when people are so heart on their sleeves when they're in love, because it just makes me think, oh, I could be a little bit braver in life. Like, aww, we would never be as brave as Jennifer Lynn putting Dear Ben on an album that is shipped like millions and millions of times around the world, you know? Like, that is gorgeous.
David Lim, I do not want to hear any compare and despair on this podcast. We only compare ourselves to ourselves and listeners at home listening to this as well. We can all be as brave as we want and need to be. Okay,
Dave? And that's a foreshadowing to a future J-Lo episode where we talk about her album Brave. Coming to you in 2025.
Or 26, who the hell knows? We should also just give a quick shout out to You Belong to Me. As we mentioned, it's a Carly Simon cover. I love when they have these concept, really personal albums, and then they'll put a cover on there because, you know, as we know, Davo, you take songs that you feel like are yours and you can really connect to. So that's clearly what she's done here.
Really nice to have a song like this where we hear J-Lo really singing in this point. And I think it's really sweet. Like, I was re-listening to this album for this episode. I'm like, gosh, you can hear her really like going for it. And there's like a real kind of energy to her vocal performance. But now in 2023, you just know that J-Lo has just gone from strength to strength as a vocal performer. We've seen her live. She does an amazing job, but it's just cute to like listen to a 2002 record and be like, wow, I would love to hear her do this song now.
Oh, yeah.
With her vocal chops.
Love it. So shall we talk about chart positions?
Oh, yes. Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. So this album has gone on to sell over 6 million copies globally, David. In the US, it was out there at Q4 doing really well, but then in early 2003, it peaked at number 2. In January 2003 in America, it was blocked off the top spot with the mums and dads fave, Nora Jones. We love you, Auntie Nora. Here in the UK, peaked at number 13, but number 2 on the UK R&B albums charts.
Were you aware of this album at the time, JB? I know you talked about Jenny from the Block, but was this album something you were drawn to off the back of that single?
I was, actually. And, you know, I had the J-Lo album was a priority purchase for me. And I think similarly to you, I had a copy CD of this. I'm sorry, Jennifer Lynn. I'm sorry.
Call 911. He comes out with the truth now. Letting, like, threw me under the bus like 10 minutes ago, but here it is. Another pair of cuffs for him, please.
And can our cell be all white, please?
Speaking of all white, we need to mention that juicy Danielle Jane Minogue gossip. On Danny Minogue's podcast, she was reminiscing on her Top of the Pops days, and she was talking about seeing our Jennifer Lynn there. And it was like, I was at Top of the Pops and I was told Jennifer Lopez was on her way, but she refused to perform unless her backstage room was redecorated. I was told everything had to be white, including the sofa. I asked to go in and see the room as she wasn't there in that moment. I was lapping up every detail. Girlfriend is covered head to toe in body makeup. How do you sit on a white couch?
Thank you, Danielle. Which, you know, our girl Danielle comes, that's an industry veteran like Jennifer. She's being factual there, you know, loads of fake tan going on. White isn't the best thing. But I think maybe J-Lo was up to a challenge. She's like, I'm going to demand this all white room. And then whatever happens in my time here happens. And then that's your deal to clean it up. And she's just being real like that. So I'm here for it. What I do think's really funny thinking about this, David, is that we're both aware, you know, Top of the Pops, TV studio dressing rooms are like the most unglamorous things ever.
Yeah.
They're just little rooms.
It's bleak, honey. It's cold. It's always cold.
Yeah.
You got a little foot heater down there that heats shit.
The poor Top of the Pops runners, like, quickly, someone's going, run to home base and get all the white paint now. And it's like, I just imagine this really shoddily, like, crappy white painted room. And she's like, well, I guess they've done it. So anyway, Davo, back to the charts where you're disappointed by the UK 13. Australian albums on the ARIAs, 14.
Oh, come on.
But we must remember, those are really good chart peaks for a Q4 release, and they still showed up really prominently on both the 2002 year-end charts and 2003, where it's split across those 2 years. So even in 2003, it was the 12th best-selling album in America. 2x platinum here in the UK, 2x platinum in America. 2x platinum in Canada, platinum in Australia. Good on you, Jennifer Lynn. I know it's New Year, New Us, Valentine's Day, feeling fabulous, but let's get a bit Christmassy.
This is a bit Christmassy, isn't it? I don't know why we've just associated with that, but we are talking about Jennifer Lynn's second single off this album, All I Have, featuring LL Cool J. And it's dead winter, eh?
And I feel like this is the headline act of your Wintry Walks playlist.
It is. It literally is like that picture of her walking in the snow in that pink jacket with the fur trim. That is the cover of my Wintry Walks playlist. Like, I think everyone knows it because we all like reenact it, you know, when you're walking through the cold. Oh, my pride is all I have. I just remember this particular time being so good for R&B and hip hop collaboration.
Especially if you were J-Lo.
Yeah. Like, bear in mind, 2002 was the same year we had Nelly and Kelly's Dilemma.
Mm.
You know, that was such a big song. So I feel like there were a lot of songs of that type on the radios at the time. You know, that kind of lightweight R&B and hip hop mid-tempo.
Yeah.
We had Fat Joe and Ashanti, What's Love? We had Ja Rule and Ashanti, Always on Time. Eve and Alicia Keys, Gangsta Lovin'.
All these R&B collaborations were so accessible in a pop way. I don't feel like it's like that anymore.
I don't know. It just felt like a moment in pop culture where the kind of R&B diva vocals with the male rappers was like such a thing. Obviously, Mariah created that synergy with way back then, you know, from Fantasy onwards. But this was the peak of that time.
Yeah.
This was what was hot, you know. So even though Jennifer felt like she was ready to move on from this formula, like, it was big. And come on, she even named her Vegas show after this song.
Again, Jenny from the Block has done wonders years on. All I Have has done wonders years on. You know, she's turning that into her narrative, the title of her Vegas show. And I'm just saying, we still need a world tour of that Vegas show, Jen.
Now, everybody always talks about this music video when we think of this song, directed by Dave Myers.
Thank you, Daddy Dave.
Shot around New York City.
Starting with the snowflake, invented CGI.
That shot of her walking in that pink coat and the fur trim with like really super tanned legs. I was always like, wow, that is an iconic look.
That is like an Essex girl's dream winter. And I'm saying that someone from Essex and as a teenager that did used to self-tan, you know, that is our dream wintry look. That is goals.
There are lots of looks in this video that I really love and would like the accessories for. The white fluffy hat. You know I love a fluffy accessory.
I mean, look, so many more looks added here to the Night of a Thousand J-Lo's party.
We need that white fluffy hat. Yeah, and the kind of eyeliner thing. Ugh. It's just, it was so stunning. And can we just say, we have two actors here in this video. I kind of really enjoy them giving that a little 10% more of dramaticness in the music video.
The Oscars needs to add best music video.
A category for this, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, did you see how iconic it was that Coach even paid J-Lo to recreate this for their campaign? You know, that scene of her like walking out with the big bags and the soft toys crying.
This is another look I'd love to see her reenact 20 years on. You know how like Victoria Beckham did the Vogue video with all the past looks? Imagine if she did something like that to launch this. Oh.
I think she's already hinted at it. I'm not surprised if she's like pulling out all these looks from the archive, getting them dry cleaned, steamed.
Or imagine like a museum exhibition and audiovisual exhibit. So one bit you're seeing the costumes in real life and another bit you're like walking through the videos.
Let's give the V&A a call. We need a This Is Me Then and Now, J-Lo exhibition to coincide with this album.
Exactly. And look, if you want us to host a Q&A night with Jennifer Lynn, we'll do it. We are available. Yeah. It's been known. It has been known and said.
We have mentioned it occasionally. I don't know. Maybe people haven't realised that we are available.
I know. I think we've got to work more J-Lo energy to get the word out there. So there was a lawsuit against one of the samples in this track. Very Special by Deborah Laws. She put the law into...
It's very special.
David, don't sing that. Don't sing that, because we'll get...
Come for me.
I don't need to pretend to be a lawyer again. Samples on this track. Thank you for the reference, Davo. Yes, so she had a lawsuit against the track for misappropriating her voice.
Because apparently the songwriters were fine with that being used, but because it's an actual audio of Miss Deborah's vocals that's looped in the sample, she apparently wasn't asked. So, I mean, you know, fair game to anyone that's trying to, you know, get what's theirs. But also, like, you're part of this really big song. I don't know. Yeah. It's not for me to comment, but yeah, Miss Deborah did what she did with this. And maybe this is like a little bit of a precedent. I mean, this is 2002. These days, you know, you look at Beyonce's Renaissance album. Everything is that all the I's are dotted, all the T's are crossed. You know, you can't be playing around with samples and using loops and shit like this and interpolations without getting all your shit and all your paperwork done, right?
Hopefully Auntie Deborah now got a nice check. You know, rightfully so.
Or J-Lo, invite her to like a New Year's Eve performance of this and get Auntie Deborah to sing that bit. Or me. I mean, I could do it too.
He's available. And I'll just be proud parent front row. I'll be like the mum in Mean Girls videoing it and dancing along. So, David, this was nominated for 2 Teen Choice Awards in 2003 in the categories Choice Music Single and Choice Music Hookup. But it lost to Avril Lavigne's Skater Boy, and as mentioned on this show before, and 50 Cent and Nate Dogg's 21 Questions, respectively. But it's an honour to be nominated.
Of course. It's actually just funny to hear J-Lo mentioned in Teen Choice Awards. Like, I didn't ever see her marketed to teens, but I guess...
We were teens.
We were in our feelings when this song came out.
Her audience was kids and teens and early 20s. You know, we're all like, you know, have been 12-year-olds envisioning our breakups that we're like, what? Come on now. Anyway, shall we talk about charts for All I Have?
We were loving it in Australia.
You were loving it in Australia. A number 2 smash hit on the ARIA charts.
Double platinum.
Number 1 in New Zealand. Thank you, New Zealand. Coming back strong. I'm right back at you.
Where have you been?
Where have you been? 6 in Scotland. Come on, guys. Because it was number 2 smash hit here in the UK.
Do you think the Top of the Pops performance helped? Because she must have been here for promo for this song. There was an in-studio performance of her and LL.
I love this era of, you know, they're doing in the work where they'll open up live with the opening line and then go into a lip-sync track. I wouldn't even do that. I would just lip-sync the whole track. I'll go, you want me to do the first line live? No, there's too much at risk there. I'm not going to find my key for the first line. Come on.
And also, like, what if you have a cold when you're in a studio and they're going to be able to tell because that intro is a little bit more, like, nasally and then the rest of the track is, like, crystal clear.
Exactly.
It's too much of a risk, as you say, JB.
And in America, last but not least, David, it was a number 1 smash hit on the Billboard Hot 100. And you know what, David? When all is said and done, I'm glad. Shall we cut to April 2003?
Now, JB, we've had a very big 2002 for J-Lo. As we said, that was the number one remix album. All I Have was the number one single. 2003, I feel like we're going to get into a little bit more of an interesting space, that maybe there is a little bit of turning of the wheels, let's just say. But for now, let's focus on the positives. Let's look at I'm Glad.
As a song in itself, I wouldn't say it's, you know, up there for me as a J-Lo track. I think it's lovely. And, you know, boy, what an incredible video. But yeah, for me, I wouldn't, you know, slap this on a greatest hits.
You know, I was really conflicted when I heard this was going to be the single. You know, having already pilfered the album from
the library. Down under library.
Yeah, I already know what I'm Glad is. So when I heard, when I read in Smash Hits magazine that that was going to be the third single, I was like, right.
Right.
But also what was funny is that around this time in this particular year, I went back to Malaysia on a holiday to visit my family. And my older cousins were old enough to drive. So they were driving us around. And I remember distinctly hearing this song on Malaysian radios. Like it was in the top 40, like, hits radio stations. So
brilliant.
Malaysians were feeling it. But in Australia, I honestly don't think I ever heard it on the radios. I've seen the CD single in Kmart, looking very lonely, like, oh, please pick me up and buy me. I just didn't get a sense of it anywhere else. Video Hits was loving the music video, but this was the time where, like, you know, they would play the video when it first comes out. It's like, oh, this is the hot new debut of this week. And if it charts, then they'll play it more. But if it doesn't chart well, you literally would never see that video.
It's over. O-V-A-H.
So I was very like, this is a great video, but I also didn't see very much of it after that first flush of publicity. Look, I'm not hating on I'm Glad. I think sonically, the beat is very good. I love the production. I love the beat. I just don't love the song that sits on top of it. That's my, this sounds really harsh. But also, I think for a song like this, it needed a video that really gets the headlines. Do you know what I mean?
And boy, did it. So the music video is a Flashdance remake homage to the film. And it's directed by David LaChapelle. Now, David, I didn't clock it was directed by Uncle David. It's obviously a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous cinematic video, but it didn't feel David LaChapelle.
It didn't look like his style. I think we're so used to his stuff being so, like, the saturation's really turned up. It's really, like...
But we love a verse king.
We do, yeah.
I remember the feeling, like, on maybe the UK press or maybe, like, SMTV CD UK, rumblings of, like, people saying that she's copied Jerry. Because of It's Raining Men, and Jerry has the whole Flashdance audition sequence in it.
I completely forgot about that.
So people were like, she's copied Jerry. And maybe now I'm thinking, we've had the Versace dress, which Jerry wore first. Now we've got this. Maybe Jennifer Lynn Lopez is just a huge Geraldine Estelle Hallowell, now Horner fan. She's only human.
She's only human. I mean, now we've got two examples of it. What's going on?
But I just think it's really funny to have that probably quite UK take angle on what is such now a global music video.
Joel, don't hate me, but I've never watched this film. But I've got two music videos as a reference point.
So you've basically seen it.
I've basically seen it. I've seen the water coming down on J-Lo. I've seen the rehearsal thing with Jerry. I think I know what this film's about.
Do you know what? I've only seen it as an adult, actually, Devo, because it is quite an adult film. It's something that lives off its, like, iconic imagery and songs from it. But, you know, when you're like, well, it doesn't necessarily completely marry up to the film. Listeners, you are completely welcome to disagree with me. But that's how I felt. It's enjoyable, but it's not exactly what you think. But Jennifer Bills is an icon and I think absolutely underrated actress. She is phenomenal. What's interesting is that more recently, Jennifer Bills showed up when J-Lo was on a talk show And Jennifer Beals said that she loved it and she thought Jennifer looked amazing. She said she thought Jennifer had better hair than her in the film. And they both look like ageless queens. I want to have whatever they're having. Give us the sponsored collagen sachets. So yeah, two icons there. It just blew my mind that they hadn't met until recently. Like, I just felt like there could have been more of an opportunity along the way. Or even have got Miss Jennifer in as a cameo in the music video would have been fab.
You know, the idea of doing Flashdance came from David LaChapelle, but also, like, J-Lo has been such a big fan of this film. This is a very pivotal film in her life. And I think in a way of this being This Is Me Then, the campaign, it's nice to see dance being, like, mirrored in the visuals because J-Lo started out as a dancer first.
Yeah.
So it has that connection.
Now, what I find really interesting is that Paramount Pictures threatened to sue Sony over the copyright issues of Flashdance. But on the flip side, it also started talks and development and Paramount Pictures of wanting to remake Flashdance with J-Lo. So it's just so funny that, like, we love this, we want to make a remake with you, but we're also going to sue over you doing it.
This is a homage. I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't threaten to sue Jezza. Now I'm just mourning the loss of this Jennifer Lynn Lopez Flashdance remake, David. That would have been so good. And we could have had J-Lo, like, redo the soundtrack. She could cover Maniac. She could cover What a Feeling. Mm. And she could create some of her new songs. You know, it could have, like, part 80s, part R&B, hip-hop. Wouldn't that have been fantastic? I mean, she could still do it.
What I find interesting is that she had Selena at the start of her career. She could have had this as a moment, a movie musical kind of synergy moment. But she really didn't take advantage of that until Marry Me, which was a big hit last year, where she played a pop star. So I'm like, all this time, I don't know, maybe it's strategic because they were like, okay, we want people to see J-Lo as J-Lo the pop star, but also, like, her film stuff should just be very separate. Like, she shouldn't play a singer.
It's worked.
It's easy, though, to just go do the Flashdance film. Like, you know you're going to kill it.
But it could be fantastic, though, in terms of, you know, we've seen, like, Hairspray, the John Waters film, then has become Hairspray the musical, and both films are beloved in their own right. The Flashdance, the film, isn't a musical. It's a song, it's a film with, like, prominent soundtrack. So this could be, like, Flashdance, the musical, starring Jennifer Lynn Lopez.
Well, you know, we can't fault the way the strategic decisions that were made with her film career, because they have positioned her as queen of rom-com. You know, a serious actor in that lane doesn't need to rely on music as a crossover. So I'm kind of glad they kept it separate, but also, like, yeah, like you said, it would have been so good to see this.
I'm not glad.
Speaking of not glad, the chart positions, this was number 32 in the US, her lowest charting single since Feeling So Good from her first album. So I don't know what was going on. You know, this is a song that J-Lo clearly is very passionate about, and she even wanted it as a lead single. It just wasn't connecting.
I think by the time you've got third single, everyone's got the album. A huge music video moment. It is going to boost the album. Also charted at number 11 here in the UK.
Oh, not bad.
And 10 in Australia.
Another top 10 hit.
So, you know, some of those singles weren't that lonely.
People picked it up in Target and Kmart, yes. Not the DL, but, you know, I'll get to it.
You'll get to it. 22 in New Zealand. Come on, guys. 21 in Scotland. Come on, come on.
Not glad about that.
Not glad about that at all, but it was gold in Australia. We are glad about that. Thank you very much.
Now, do you think the UK sales might have been partly boosted by the Big Brother's remix?
David Lim, I don't know, because this is brand new information to me. So my mind is blown and I'm glad about that.
I actually only just was reminded of it a few minutes before we started recording, because it's on Spotify, thankfully. But also, I remember at the time picking up the CD and being like, oh, there's a remix by Big Brothers. Because the first two Big Brothers singles were sort of big in Australia. So I can understand that being an appeal. It's all the mandems, but where are the ladies? Like, we want to hear our booty our love booty girls. Booty love
queens.
They could have done BVs. They could have done, I don't know, like a female verse.
When we first met, it was like magic. You caught my eye. So stunning, so beautiful. I lost my mind. I was heaven sent to tell you that you're one of a kind. Like a priceless gemstone. If you happy, you mine. Yo, I know I make you happy. You know it's not the Versace. Louis Vuitton, how I do things. Body. I know you love me, mommy, cause I make you feel special. Together we shine like the bling in the ice vessel. I'm so grateful, I'm glad that you're so faithful.
I loved so much when we saw the Big Brothers and Booty Love as part of the 90s baby pop tour last year. Like when they came out and they were singing This Is Big Bro taking over the show, like something came out in me that I didn't know was in there
the
anymore.
Lad,
the like I was going
out.
Crazy. The boy 2003 from Romford, like this. It was like the closest I'll ever get to a mosh pit. Like I was like, oh, just something awoke in me and it was actually really wonderful. Like I was like, fuck yes! Incredible.
Because normally I see this energy from you when it's like a pop girly, but for the Big Brothers song, I wasn't expecting that at all.
And then just wait till they got to Favourite Things. Bloody hell. I'd love to have seen more of that in a bigger way. You know, love what, you know, Mariah set the template for of, you know, the pop version. Then, like, you know, the R&B hip-hop remixes, which you've educated me on. Thank you so much for that. Then it would have been... And then, obviously, they've done this with J-Lo a lot, and it's worked so well. And then we've seen it a lot in the industry. But wouldn't it have been fantastic to have, like, these more, like, localized, serviced in a mainstream way for that territory? Would have been so cool.
Mm. Well, anyway, I thought it was worth pointing out.
Yeah, that, thank you for that, darling.
She had a Big Brothers collab. I mean, that's going in their bio, surely, like collaborated with Jennifer Lynn Lopez.
Let's fast forward to the summer of that year, David, August 2003, with two very notable things going on for our gen. Let's start quickly at the cinema. We had the release of, it's not Giggly and it's not Gillet, it's, what did I say again?
Gilly.
Gilly. Thank you, David. I mean, maybe this is part of the why the film wasn't a huge success. Because, you know, in Romford, it would have just been that, I want to see Giggle.
I actually always thought it was Jiggly. Like, as in Caliente, Jiggly.
I watched the trailer and that's how they called it.
Gilly. Oh.
Yeah. Now, this film is really infamous. It was a box office bomb, unfortunately. And I feel like here is where some of the real backlash started to happen on Bennifer.
I mean, it was touted at the time as the most expensive box office bomb of all time. I think, unfortunately, the film doesn't really hold up. This was the beginning of the descent into the lowest point of J-Lo's career. Also, we must say at this point in middle of 2003, she fired her longtime manager, Benny Medina. Benny would come back to manage her 5 years later, and they've been very good since, you know, he still looks after her to this day. But this was a particularly rocky period of time in J-Lo's career. And she would say on record years later that she felt invigorated by the media coverage around Gilly. She said, "I lost my sense of self, questioned if I belonged in this business, thought maybe I did suck at everything. And my relationship self-destructed in front of the entire world. It was a two-year thing for me until I picked myself up again."
If J-Lo is questioning, and we don't compare and despair with other people, but if J-Lo, the woman who I would say belongs in this industry potentially more than anyone else in this world, is questioning if she belongs in it, imagine a world where J-Lo hung up everything.
It's crazy because, like, I totally get the pressure, and we said this at the start of the episode, like, she's had that hit record with box office smashes alongside hit albums. Like, I don't think anyone saw this coming that soon. You know, we always know that, like, the public can get tired of you and, you know, the narrative and stuff, and then people start to turn, but I didn't expect this to come so soon. You know, at the time it was a shock, like, even reading all the kind of nasty tabloid stuff about how badly the film was doing, like, it really impacted her music as well and general public perception of her.
Yeah, it's such a shame. So, and then here in the UK, the film was dropped from, it says virtually every cinema. I don't know of any cinema releasing it, so do let us know out there if you did, after it was critically planned. So once it unfortunately bombed in the US, like, it its theatrical release didn't happen here in the UK. It went straight to DVD. So yeah, it made $7.7 million against a $75.6 million budget, but it did win several Razzies, and not everybody has that. If I had a Razzie, I'd proudly put it on the shelf. I'd go and accept it in person. Let's continue on the more positive stuff of August 2003. And regardless, that is a huge pop culture moment, for better or for worse. Here we are, though, with the officially the final single of the album and the fourth one, Baby, I Love You.
I feel like this is the kind of song that J-Lo would have wanted as a single quite early on in the campaign, because this is the most indicative of what the album really sounds like. That kind of like kind of soulful mid-tempo.
Yeah.
Giving us BBC Radio 2 Sunday afternoon vibes. Now, Joel, do you remember this song having a moment, having a thing?
I'll be honest, I don't at all.
I don't think we had a moment with this in Australia. Like, I kind of caught on to this with the next release, which is what I always tie Baby I Love You with.
J-Lo really must love this song still to this day. And even still in the times pre-Ben reunion, it was in her book, True Love, that she meaningfully quoted the lyrics of the song several times throughout the memoir. Now, I've not read that book. I need to read that Jennifer Lopez memoir. If there was a world where we didn't have to work and we had more time, I really wish we could do like a Write Back At You book club, a Write Back At You cinema club, where we could dissect all these books and films. But that would just have to wait for 2050, the retirement era of the podcast. Now, this music video is this gorgeously intimate music video.
It's very different to how we've seen J-Lo before, because it starts off as you're waking up in bed with her, you're under the sheets, it's all very gentle, soft lighting. You know, it's meant to give you like no makeup J-Lo. For the most part, now in an Instagram age, we've seen what J-Lo looks like without makeup. I would say this is J-Lo mostly without makeup.
Mm.
And she looks stunning.
Absolutely.
Like, quite a different woman, but very, very gorgeous naturally anyway. The only thing I would say is that the yellowish blonde hair, I'm not loving. It makes her look washed out.
If I look like that, I'm happy to look washed out.
But I love the fact that this is meant to be a very sexy, simple, intimate video. It's meant to look like a one take shot on a handycam.
Very arty, very arty. So apparently there is a version of the music video featuring scenes from, oh, for fuck's sake,
Gilly.
Thanks for the help. I think this is a big part of the problem at the box office. I do think, and this is by no means a discredit to the video, because I think it's gorgeous, it's very artistic, very interesting for a mainstream pop star at this time. I think there's a slight re-edit in there and different music that could be the POV you're being chased in a slasher movie.
It's that kind of scene where she's running down the corridor of her apartment, looking really like happy, but also like potentially scared and being chased. I'm like, where are you going, girl? Like, why are you running? Don't run.
But David, just before we leave it, that black and white single cover.
Oh, that was from the album shoot. I mean, give us that.
That is like sexy as fuck. And I'm sorry to be rude, but it really is.
That is sexy.
And the like, it's black and white, and then Jennifer Lopez, Baby, I Love You in pink. Like, imagine if you looked like that. That would be, if that was me, if I had that shot, that would be blown up in my house. Like, you come in the front door, hallway, pew! I was just in my flop era in 2003. Clearly, it did something here in the UK, because it was a number three smash hit.
Baby, I Love You.
Baby, I Love You was a number three smash hit here in the UK.
On our main singles chart.
As well as being number three smash hit, David. Number one on the UK hip-hop R&B charts.
I can't believe this. Wow.
Such a shock. I'm glad, which I remember, number 11. But Baby, I Love You, no recollection. It came out March 2004 here.
Like almost 9 months after.
Yeah, I'm glad was June 2003. So we were just hungry for Jennifer. And then that was our only UK single that year. What else? Number 7 in Scotland. They weren't feeling it as much. 72 on the US Billboard Hot 100. Very respectable on a fourth single release. So let's wrap up this episode, David, with The Real Me DVD, which was released in November 2003, which I don't have the UK release date, but makes me think, was Baby I Love You released on that months before the UK?
That's what I think. So this is actually my first official purchase in this era for J-Lo.
Because you couldn't copy the DVD.
No, I felt like, because I loved the album so much, I needed to like somehow participate in the sale.
That's sweet of you.
And a DVD compilation of all her music videos up till this point, you know, this was a pre-YouTube era. So I was like, yes, I need to have this. And also there was a bonus disc on it with audio tracks. And there were remixes, and I remember thinking, I need a club remix of The One, which, you know, back then, pre-Wikipedia, I didn't know it was being serviced to clubs or whatever. It was just my favorite album track, and I saw, oh, they did a club remix of it. Okay, I've not heard that. And on there was the R. Kelly remix of Baby, I Love You. And Baby, I Love You was track one on the audio disc. So to me, it always felt like that single was part of the push
that
for this.
That is good bang for your buck, like, it's really up to date with the music videos. Normally with this release, like the Hilary Duff one in the last episode, like the Come Clean music video is not on it. They're normally released before the end of the campaign.
Like, I don't really remember seeing Baby I Love You on like video hits and stuff, but I definitely saw it on this DVD. This made number 16 on the Australian music DVD charts. I loved it because, you know, the booklet was in a similar style to the album, that kind of vintage. Yeah.
Same photo shoot. It's the same campaign. It's consistency.
Do you remember this DVD being a thing?
No, I don't at all. I mean, I would have loved it. I loved a music DVD. It was number 19, though, here in the music in the UK music video charts. 69, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, on the US Billboard 200.
For like a compilation DVD release to still chart on the Billboard 200.
13 in the Japanese albums. Thank you, Japan. Gold in Australia, gold in the UK. 3 times platinum in the United States.
Oh, Joel, what a time. And look, the tail end of this era was when, yeah, I feel like things were really changing for Jennifer Lynn. But still, it's just nice to just recap this era of incredible highs and just success. And it's just nice to see that, you know, 2 decades on, she's still greater than ever as a performer, a businesswoman, savvy, cross-media campaigns. You know, we're talking film, production, TV. She's a media mogul.
And by the time this is out, David, one of my most anticipated releases, her Amazon film, Shotgun Wedding, will be out, co-starring Jennifer Coolidge. We'll have seen it by then. Can't wait. All right, guys. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we have. David, thank you so much for this suggestion. I've loved walking down this path of Jennifer Lopez in this era. You have been listening to Right Back At Ya, the real 2000s pop music podcast. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a lovely 5-star review. Tell your friends that are J-Lo stans. Tell your friends that are pop fans. Email our hearts at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can follow me at Dr_Joel B, and you can follow him at
Love Limmy.
Until next time, bye.